Welcome back, everybody. True Crime on Easy Street. We are getting over our Halloween hangover, our candy.
Are we?
Withdrawal, sugar withdrawal.
Oh, that kind of hangover.
All of, yeah.
That's the other that. Kind. I didn't realize that's the one you were talking about.
Well, Halloween's during the week. It was during the week. So, you know, we couldn't do too much partying. We had work the next day, right?
Some of us work Fridays, Scott.
Term. No, not what you speak of.
I know. I am Kelly Turner, and I'm not a doctor.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Katie Givens, not a lawyer.
We are your local team of experts here.
We keep saying that.
We're going to discuss a case today, and we will get to that. Do we have any shout-outs?
I feel like I do, but I don't remember what it is.
I think you said this last week.
I think I did.
I've got one.
All right, okay. Hit it, Katie.
Will Bearden, he is a friend of mine that is actually in law school with me. I met him there, and he just randomly the other day was like, I've been listening to your podcast.
You didn't even know that he knew about it?
Had no idea.
Oh, well, thanks, Will, for listening.
Maybe Brooke mentioned it to him.
I doubt it. Yeah. I don't know, but I'll throw him under the bus a little bit. He said,
yeah, sure.
He likes the local stories better, and he was not as big a fan of the Halloween series. I was like, well, just tell me how you feel, Will.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
Yeah, I like doing local things too, but we are from kind of a small area.
Yeah,
so.
Sorry, we need more criminals here.
He's from Oneonta area, so maybe if you got any stories, Will. He works in the DA's office.
Yeah, yours
there,
is so. Smart, you know what? Will. Give us one.
No, we would love to have Will on the show and be an expert for a day with us.
And speaking of Brooke, I don't know if I'm supposed to make this announcement.
But
we are sitting in the room with an honor student. And she knows another honor student.
Oh,
you know
my
that?
Gosh. That's right. Katie
Givens.
The Dean's
List came out last week at law school. Gosh. And Brooke and Katie Beth are both on.
Well,
both
I'm on the honor roll, not the Dean's List. I'm a few points shy of the Dean's List.
I thought the President's List.
Well, no, in law
school. And then the Dean's List.
No, in law school or in my school, the Dean's List is the top one.
Got it.
So right. I always say it wrong, too, because that's how it was when I was in college. It was presidents, then deans, but there's no president's list.
Okay. Well, anyway, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Thanks.
If you thought we were excuses about why she doesn't contribute as much as Kelly and I, because she has to read, it's true. And she has been reading, and there's the proof that you need.
Lots of reading.
So she's done with it now, though, so she's going to jump on with both feet beginning today.
So are you on a break right now from law school?
No.
Or is it just keeping on trucking?
Yeah, we're just right past midterm, so we're just trucking on through. And I think our last week of class is the week before Thanksgiving, and then we get Thanksgiving off, and then final start.
Never mind, withdrawn.
Yeah.
Do you get the rest of December off, though?
After finals, yeah.
Oh, that's
Which
nice
finals go through, like, the middle of December. Like, it's like 2 weeks or whatever, so it's...
Yeah.
That's the longest break we get because we start right back in January.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so just I mean, 2 weeks
there
for
a purpose.
Yeah.
Just 2 weeks for the holidays? Couple
Ish.
Of,
yeah.
Okay.
Grad school and advanced degrees are a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, you're there to get it done.
Well, you're motivated at that point. It's
yeah,
not
you
like
really are.
When you're a sophomore in college, you're just,
no, when you're just
having a good
for the
time.
Break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo. Now you see the light at the end of the tunnel and you're trying to get there.
A little bit more focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to check all these classes off.
All right. Well, since we don't have any more shout outs, thank you, Will. I guess we'll get started, right?
I think we should.
So, Katie is in the big chair this week, and I'm 100% a dummy.
I'm 85% dummy.
Scott, you've read a little bit about this subject.
Yeah, a little bit.
We talked briefly about this. This is going to be a good one.
I think so.
Take it away, Katie.
Well, since we have just, I guess hurricane season is not finished, but we've just been through a bad stretch of it. And there's been several storms that have devastated Florida, North Carolina, even flooding into Tennessee, which is, I mean, nuts.
Which you don't think about when you think about hurricanes.
But. No, absolutely not. I got in a rabbit hole with hurricanes and hurricane damage, and I've gone back to Hurricane Katrina, which we all remember.
Yep.
Hurricane
2005.
I'm going to read you just some little Hurricane Katrina facts here. It was a powerful and devastating storm that caused 1,392 deaths, and the damage was estimated at $125 billion.
Wow.
Of course, it made landfall in late August of 2005, and it particularly devastated the city of New Orleans and its surrounding area, which is where our story is going to take place today. it's tied with Hurricane Harvey as being the costliest tropical cyclone in the Atlantic. It was the 12th tropical cyclone, the 5th hurricane, and the 3rd major hurricane of the 2005 season. So it was a pretty bad year, it seemed like, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the 4th most intense Atlantic hurricane to make landfall in the U.S., and yeah, that's gauged by however they figure that.
Scientist, yeah. Mm-hmm. Somehow.
Yeah, I forget the name of it, but there's a scale where they judge based on, I think, wind speed, right?
Yeah, and
probably. Yeah.
So Katrina was formed on August 23rd of 05, and it made a weird pattern. So it was a tropical storm, of course, first, and then headed westward toward Florida. It's going to come across Florida and make landfall at Hallandale Beach, where it strengthened into a hurricane, weakened again over southern Florida. It's going to come back into the Gulf of Mexico, go across the Gulf of Mexico on October. I keep saying that when I was doing my notes.
Well, it is
too.
October.
In August, so it's going to be August 26th now, it's going to speed up again. It's going to get to a Category 5 hurricane over the Gulf of Mexico, and it will weaken to a Category 3 by the time it makes its second landfall on August 29th over Louisiana and Mississippi.
Yeah, they get back in the ocean right there in the Gulf, and they just gain so much strength.
Yeah,
like I watched a little recreation video, and I was like, I was so young when it made landfall, I didn't realize it literally came from Florida through the Gulf and then back on land.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that.
Oof. So the largest loss of life from Hurricane Katrina was due to the flooding caused by the engineering flaws in the flood protection system, particularly the levees that surrounded the city of New Orleans. So 80% of the city, as well as a large area in the neighboring parishes, they were flooded for weeks. The flooding destroyed most of New Orleans' transportation and communication facilities, left tens of thousands of people who did not evacuate with little access to food, shelter, or other necessities. And if you'll remember seeing this on the news back in the day, I mean, they basically were like, yeah, this is the first mandatory, I think it was the first mandatory evacuation they had in the city. And they were like, if you do not evacuate, we will not be able to get to you.
Mm-hmm.
They had warned, you know, to the best I guess they could. But I mean, there's arguments here and there whether people could get out, whether they could afford to get out, where do they go.
There's also been some arguments about some roads being blocked.
Yeah, like to where they couldn't get out, like couldn't pass them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what a lot of people had to do was find a shelter, which is what we're going to talk about today. But this disaster in New Orleans is going to prompt a massive national and international response effort, including federal, local, and private rescue operations to evacuate those displaced in the city in the following weeks. And after the storm, multiple investigations concluded that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which had designed and built the levees, were responsible for the failure of the flood control system. So, I mean, it was just an engineering failure all around.
How old were the levees at the time that they broke? Do you know that?
So they would have been rebuilt in the late 20s, right, Scott?
Yep.
Because the Army Corps of Engineers could not be held financially liable for this because they had been granted sovereign immunity after the Flood Control Act of 1928.
That was what gave
them. And I assume that's when the levees were redone.
That's right. Well, that's when the project started.
Okay.
That was after the big flood when the Mississippi River flooded in 27. I read part of that story, but yeah, it was the next year that Congress gave the Army Corps of Engineers that authority.
Yeah, that immunity. Yes, because it's like, fix it.
But we're not going to hold you responsible if you screw it up.
I guess because they were like, well, what's our liability in this? Mm-hmm. And they were probably like, well, none.
Yeah, zero.
Which is, I mean, it's kind of crazy to give anyone no liability in something. Who, there's always someone to blame.
But also give them the job of, do they get paid to do this?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a federal agency, but it's the same thing for anybody like McDonnell Douglas and Boeing. If they built military jets for the U.S. military and that jet crashed because of a technical malfunction, you can't sue Boeing or McDonnell Douglas. I don't think McDonnell Douglas exists anymore, but they have the same, the government contractors, military contractors have that same kind of immunity. So that you can't sue them if your husband is a pilot and the plane screws up and kills him.
Mm. Yeah, because
I guess because it would potentially just eliminate that branch of.
Yeah. Well, they just say, well, we're not going to sell you any more airplanes. Go find them somewhere else. But good luck, because if you're going to make them liable for the screw ups.
Yeah. No one's going to want to work with you.
No one's going to do it.
Yeah, so, I guess
it was the only way to get the levees built, or at least some levees, some sort of, and the levees existed before then, but hopefully, I'm sure the plan was to improve them.
Yeah, the levees broke in the 20s. Mm-hmm. They fixed them. The levees broke again in 05. We fixed them again, fun fact, at a cost of $14.5 billion. And this project has only been completed for a few years. Mm-hmm. And, a fact I saw was that due to rising sea levels and like the weakness or the softness of the soil, however the ground is there, they could need repairing as early as like this year.
Water is a booger, to say the least.
Well, it wants to go where it wants to go.
It's very, very difficult to have something that is just 100% waterproof.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the levees are, I mean, they're miles. I mean, there's a slow incline up to the actual berm itself, if it's the one that I read about, that's the way it's built. And we're talking about something that's a mile long. I mean, you can't even, when you're standing on some sections of the levee on the Mississippi River, if the Mississippi River is running at its normal level, you can't see the river from the top of the levee. That's how far away it is.
Yep.
But there's so much, it's a sandy soil, and sand is not a friend of levees when the water gets to where it's putting all that pressure on them.
It moves.
The sand's going to give away first. Yeah. So yeah, there's a bunch of variables.
Well, and also I feel like New Orleans is so low. Like,
yeah.
You know how you buy lake property around here and they're like, will it perk or whatever that is, where they can put in like the septic system and all of that. So I feel like New Orleans wouldn't.
No.
Like that whole section would not perk.
It's the city's below sea level.
So it's, you know.
Thus the need for the levees.
Yeah. It's kind of a difficult spot.
I assume that these engineers are top of their fields, but I always make the joke to Shane, like when, you know, they redo the roads around here all the time. I said, I should have been a road engineer in a past life, because you don't have to know anything, I don't think. And then when you mess up your job, they just pay you to do it again.
Yeah, don't assume that the government employs the top of the line.
I guess I shouldn't, but I really want to.
If you're top of your game, you're probably not going to work for the government.
I don't know.
I wouldn't.
Well, the private sector is definitely going to pay more.
I'm not at the top of my game either. So,
I mean, I need to look into that. Yeah.
Mm. Well, here we all are in the private sector. Well, anyway, we are going to center our story around Memorial Medical Center in New Orleans.
Okay.
It's a hospital. It's now got a new name, probably because of all this.
I'm sure.
And it had a new name prior to this, so like, but we're going to call it Memorial Medical Center. And if you look this up, you're always going to see the title, 5 Days at Memorial. Okay. And those 5 days were August 28th through September 1st of 2005. It's the 5 day span we're talking about. So this was not only a hospital, but it was used as a storm shelter for people who had not, could not evacuate. So there are doctors, there are patients, there are family members of these doctors and staff and that have come to shelter with their family. There are just random people who have come to shelter. They have brought their animals that weren't, I don't think they were really supposed to bring their animals, but they've brought there are animals sheltering here too. And they think that they'll be here, you know, through the night, maybe the next day. Like, it's not supposed to be this long term shelter in place. Shelter while the hurricane makes landfall, passes over the city, go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If your home is
right
there to go. But you leave anyway. Mm-hmm. You go somewhere. There is also a facility in this hospital called Life Care. And Life Care is a long-term acute care facility that leased out a space in the hospital. So it's separate from our hospital here. It's its own thing. It's not ran by Memorial Medical Center, but it is on the 7th floor, I believe, of the hospital. And the hospital is 8 floors.
Okay.
So we'll start our story here. There's a woman named Susan Mulderic, And she was a nursing director and the rotating emergency incident commander for this storm for the hospital. She was in charge of directing hospital operations during this crisis while in communication with the hospital's top executives. She had helped draft the hospital's emergency plan, which was a plan that lacked guidance for how to deal with a complete power failure or for how to conduct an evacuation when the streets are flooded.
Yeah.
So both things we're going to deal with here today.
Is she just going off statistics there? Like, when's the last time New Orleans flooded?
I'm sure they probably pulled it from other plans.
What I read was that, and I only got about 70 pages into this book, but I did get that far. And what happened was they were guessing. Mm-hmm. They had a plan for hurricanes. They had a plan for power outage. And they had a plan for flooding. But none of the plans that they had put together considered the possibility that all three of those things could happen at one time, which is exactly what Katie is about to tell us.
Gotcha. Happened. Okay.
Because where this hospital is, it's not supposed to flood, really. Like, because the levees had to break and then the floodwaters came eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, not immediate.
No, it was kind of a slow burn. Mm-hmm. Like, you know it's coming, mm-hmm. but what can you do?
Right.
Yeah.
And they had a backup generator so they were hooked into like the city's main power and like the city's backup power, really, I think. Isn't that how it works? Like there was like main power failure, but then they had backup power and then they had generator power.
Yeah, I know they had generators, but the design flaw at the hospital was that all the generators were in the basement.
Yes, okay. Like they could only mm-hmm. take on 4 feet of water before they were done.
Okay. Yeah. Again, just not preparing for mm-hmm. the levees to break.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is what it was. Had the levees not broke, their plan would have worked.
Well, right? as long as it's not flooded streets, mm-hmm. then sure, you can get everybody out. Mm-hmm.
But again, that's why the streets were flooded. The levees
broke. But you combine
broke.
Power outage with flooded streets and then there's no plan.
Right. But we would have had a plan if the levees hadn't broke.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We would have been fine.
Well, if the levees hadn't broken, everybody would have gone home the next day like Katie
like
said.
They were and the power wouldn't have gone out.
And right. the power would have never gone
out. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not ready to kind of come down too hard on them. Hey, I mean,
stick around.
Okay, I'll hold
stick
on.
Stick around.
All right.
So the floodwaters in question are going to trap more than 2,000 people inside this hospital. Mm. That's going to be roughly 600 staff, more than 200 patients, as well as family members, because there are family members of the staff, family members of the patients who have come to stay with their family members. Like, you know, your mom's in the hospital. And the hospital's safe during a storm. Well, I go sit with mom in the hospital while the storm mm-hmm. comes through.
Right.
The storm is also going to knock out the hospital's main power, the running water, and the sanitation.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, just imagine all these people, and now eventually the toilets don't work.
And you've got people brought their animals. Mm-hmm.
And the temperature, when the power goes down, the air conditioning is not hooked up to the generator.
Oh.
So the generator is only going to run the necessities. And so it runs one elevator that does not run the air conditioning. And so that's how they know when the main power goes out, that's how they could tell to begin with, because the air goes down. They had it really cold in there before that because they wanted to try to trap as much cold air in as they could. Like everyone was freezing the night before the power goes out.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, you know, we got to keep it cool. And so the temperatures inside this hospital are going to climb over 100 degrees.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's the end of August in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And the storm has just come through. We all know what that would feel like.
Well, and you know how beautiful the weather gets after a major storm
like
that?
Yeah, the sky's clear, the sun comes out. Right?
I mean, just beaming down on you.
Some windows had broken, but they're breaking more just to get airflow. You know, through.
Oh my gosh. What a nightmare.
They're going to start running out of food, and the smell is really what's going to start like bothering people. I mean, just there's going to be just this, the sewage smell along with the smell of death.
It's like what I envision that hospital smelled like in The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's closer than you might think.
Oh my gosh.
So a crew of doctors, nurses, and family members are going to begin carrying patients to the only working elevator on the second floor, which took patients to the rooftop level of the parking garage. Each patient was then put on a stretcher and maneuvered through a 3x3 foot hole in a machine room wall and then out to the helipad where rescue workers and the Coast Guard then took over. By nightfall, the memorial staff had gotten their patient count down from about 180 to around 130. So there was an opportunity to evacuate more patients later in the night, but the staff, I mean, they needed to rest. They have been carrying patients to this elevator. They ride them up the elevator, but then they're carrying them the rest of the way. They got to get them through the wall, up to the parking garage.
And there was no way to rotate staff?
No. They were rotating them the best they could.
But, I mean, yeah. But okay, I get it.
They had, the way that they had separated the staff, there was an A team and a B team, and the A team was supposed to be there for the hurricane that night. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning they were going to tag team out with the B team, mm-hmm. who was going to come in, and that would cover a 24-hour shift. The problem was when the waters started to rise,
the B team couldn't come in.
Couldn't get there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's taking multiple people just to move mm-hmm. one patient.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so.
I could definitely see that. It's, and patients vary in shapes and sizes. I mean, it's not.
And accompanying instruments and things that everything they that need goes to with keep them alive.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Just once they got them to the roof, getting them up to the helipad was up two flights, and I may say this later on, but two flights of metal stairs up to the top of this helipad.
And so they've already done this with roughly 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after, because there was, Katie, tell me if I got this wrong, there was an elevator that went up to the helipad, but like Katie said a minute ago, when the generators went out, that elevator stopped working.
Yeah, there was So there's just
that one other elevator.
Yeah, well, this is the only elevator hooked up to the generator.
Right.
So.
And it's not like you can go unhook it and hook up the other one.
No. Mm-hmm.
It's not that simple.
No.
This is a major issue here, like hooking an elevator up to a generator. Yeah. It's not, you know.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
So, like I said, the staff needed rest, and the helipad wasn't really particularly safe after dark. I mean, it's just a concrete pad and there's no railing, mm-hmm. nothing. And if you fall off this.
Yeah, and you don't have power.
Yeah, so there's no lights. Just, you know, whatever light they have by a flashlight or whatever.
And whatever spotlights on the aircraft that can shine down to see where to land. That's it.
Yep.
Oh my God. So I've said that too many times already. Sorry, y'all.
No, it's terrible.
You're going to keep going.
So LifeCare's administrators were working to secure evacuation assistance for their patients, which it had hoped would come in the morning. So they're like, because like I said, they're acute care patients. Like they all need assistance. There's no one in this LifeCare facility that can just walk, you know. In the middle of the night, this is about 48 hours after Katrina first struck. So we've been here almost 2 days now. The backup generators are going to stop. Mm. That's going to kill the only elevator that was working and all the remaining power. So in LifeCare, which is on the 7th floor, these critically ill patients begin suffering as their machines, that a lot of them are relying on to stay alive, like there's people on ventilators, they're going to switch to the battery reserves. And those don't last long. Like in some cases, 30 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And those are going to sputter out, at which point it appeared that the Coast Guard could evacuate a few very critical patients if they were brought immediately to the helipad. So they're like, we're here, let's go. So they're having to use, is it AMBU bags? Is that how you say it? Which are the bags, like if you've seen like Grey's Anatomy or whatever, that they literally manually are squeezing the air into
these people's. It's a manual respirator.
Yeah. But there wasn't enough manpower or oxygen to save them all. And several of these people are going to die just trying to get them evacuated once these mm-hmm. machines are going to go down. So when the backup generators that, like I said, were powering the only elevator failed, staff and volunteers began carrying patients up many flights of stairs in the hospital. And then, like I said, the two flights of metal stairs to the helipad. Some were transported to the parking garage where they were loaded in the back of a pickup truck and driven to the rooftop level because, like, the parking garage is going to go, you know, snake around. That was a mode that was thought of after they started really wearing out carrying all these patients up. Someone had figured out, oh, we can get them, you know, out here to the parking garage, because everyone who had parked in the parking garage, their cars were fine mm-hmm. for the most part. a lot of the staff was actually, they would, when they're taking these breaks, some of them would go out to their car and turn the air on for a second, mm-hmm. just to like cool off and have a second. And then they'd come back in and, you know, tag back in. But patients are also going to be carried down to the emergency room, where now we're going to have some airboats that are coming in to help evacuate patients. So we're going up and we're going down. After most of the ICU patients and the patients in the life care facility had been evacuated, the Coast Guard helicopters began arriving less frequently because they're going to have to swap their operations to other rooftop rescues because they have put all their resources into this this hospital. But there's, I mean, there's people all over the city.
No, there's people on their own roof and they can't get down mm-hmm. and they're going to die on the top of their roof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're like, we've got, you know, a ton of your critical patients out. We've got to spread ourselves around a little bit. So at this point, the staff is going to reprioritize and they're going to develop what has been deemed an unconventional method of triage. And I would say I don't agree with that fully, except so the any ambulatory patients, which means people who can move around on their own, are prioritized for evacuation. But this is where it gets dicey. Those with do not resuscitate orders were placed last in the list. Mm-hmm. And now we can go on all day about this, but do not resuscitate does not mean this person does not want to live.
True.
Yeah.
It means that
they don't want to be on a machine. Mm-hmm.
And so that was a big point of contention in this. It's like,
yeah.
DNR does not mean that they wouldn't wish to be evacuated. It means that
right.
they don't want to, you know.
I mean, they're not there for Kevorkian.
Yeah.
They're there yeah. to try to get better. They just don't want to be on a machine.
But mm-hmm. I can see the end of the telescope that the people who created that triage list were looking at, because they knew that there was no machine to put them on because the power's out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that I agree with that triage system,
yeah,
but I just, see why. Well, there's no machine to plug them up. They're in very bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
They may have to put them on a machine at any time. We don't have a machine, so...
They're not all in very bad shape.
Okay, fair enough.
Because you can have a DNR order mm-hmm. and not be in very bad shape.
Okay, that's fine.
They want that if you go into the hospital for
mm-hmm.
yeah.
minor surgery.
Right.
They
yeah.
know.
Yeah, that's true.
So, the life care patients that hadn't been evacuated and in the ICU patients that hadn't been evacuated. So, life care is on the 7th floor and ICU is on the 8th floor.
Okay.
They remained in critical condition. If they had yet to be moved to the helipad area or emergency room, resources are getting pretty scarce and the staff is getting really tired from the constant climbing of stairs and caring of patients. So doctors begin to realize that it may be impossible to evacuate some of the life care and severely ill, which they're going to categorize as category 3 in their triage system. Without machinery to stabilize them and adequate transportation to get them to the evacuation areas. Because, I mean, some of these people, they're literally holding a tight sheet under them and moving them up and down stairs. Yeah. Like, others are going to weigh too much to be carried up or down the stairs. There's at least two that are mentioned in the article and in the series on this that are almost 400-pound men. Mm-hmm. Mm. Who they didn't even know if they'd fit through the hole that they had, the 3x3 foot hole that they had made to get onto a truck to drive them up to helipad.
Mm-hmm.
Once we got them to the helipad, are we going to be able to get them up those metal stairs?
Mm-hmm.
If we get them down, are we going to be able to get them on the boat? Like, they just didn't know. They didn't know if they had the resources. So patient evacuations have begun on the 3rd day. They progress slowly until the 5th day, when it's going to be reported that some medical staff decided to hasten the deaths of critically ill patients, believing they would not survive, with lethal injections of morphine.
Holy moly.
And we'll get more into that after these words from our sponsor.
Are you looking for a health option in Cherokee County where the staff makes you feel just like family? Then look no further than Cherokee Family Healthcare.
Cherokee Family Healthcare treats patients of all ages with emphasis on personalized care. call 256-266-1021 to schedule an appointment. Or just walk into the office at 819 West Main Street and Center. If you aren't feeling well, and let them help you return to good health.
Connie Geimer and the staff at Cherokee Family Healthcare are accepting new patients, and they accept most insurance plans. So whether you're suffering from a cold, the flu, aches or pains, or want to learn more about weight loss or preventative testing, make an appointment by calling Connie Geimer and the staff at Cherokee Family Healthcare at 256-266-1021 and let them get you on your way back to good health.
Kelly and Katie, let me tell you guys a quick story. Recently, while I was dining at Easy Street, I met a man from Georgia who told me that he and his wife were visiting the Weiss Lake area, planning to relocate here permanently when he retires soon. I told him the first thing that came to my mind, call Greg Oliver at Go Realty. The number is 256-504-3847. Greg is the owner and the broker at Go Realty right here in Cherokee County. If you're thinking of moving here or anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, if you're looking for property anywhere in the area, call Greg. He has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he's ready to help you find exactly what you're looking for. He's got 25 years of experience in the real estate market. Go again and look at that complete list that he currently has for offer. That's Greg Oliver, WeissLake.com. So visit the website or call Greg Oliver at...
What's that number again?
Thanks, guys. 256-504-3847.
And as we move into our holiday season, the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce wants to remind everyone to shop local.
Cherokee County has some lovely shops that you can patron throughout the holiday season. Get any kind of gifts that you need. Scott, what kind of gifts do you need?
I don't really need anything, but there are plenty of things that I want, and you can get a lot of those things right here in Cherokee County. You can get a great meal at one of the many restaurants that is a member of the Chamber of Commerce. It's as simple as filling up your gas tank at a local station before you go out of town to do some shopping, if you have to leave town, but we hope you don't. Stay right here in Cherokee County.
Oh, yeah. And my gift that I want you to get me, Scott, you can definitely buy local. So I'll let you know about that later.
Well, you're going to ruin the surprise.
So we want to challenge all of you to make sure to do as much shopping as you can this holiday season right here in Cherokee County.
And if you need more information, visit cherokee-chamber.org.
Guys, we want to let you know that don't forget that Easy Street is now open for lunch 5 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday, open at 11.
Great lunch menu.
Mm, let's do lunch.
Brand new. We've shared it on our Facebook page, and I know that Shane has also shared it on the Easy Street Facebook page, so it's easy to find the menu, and it's terrific. Everything on it.
Yes. What's your favorite thing, Scott?
I like the hamburger steak with the mashed potatoes. The mashed potatoes are better than I can make, and I make pretty darn good mashed potatoes.
No, they are.
They're terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, what's your favorite? Yeah.
I like, you can get a flatbread pizza. Mm-hmm. I also like just the chicken fingers.
Yeah, chicken fingers are great. Best chicken fingers in town. How about you, Kelly?
I like the rice bowl with the chicken and the vegetables.
It's all
the
good.
Yum yum sauce.
Ooh.
So delicious. You're not going to go wrong. Salad bar's always fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Have lunch at Easy Street. You might see us there one day.
Yeah, you never know. 11 to 2 every day is when the menu prices on the lunch menu are.
That sounds right.
That's right. Something like that. Everything that comes out of that swinging door is delicious at Easy Street, we promise.
Yes. Thank you to Easy Street for being our primary sponsor, our main sponsor.
Yeah. Thanks, Shane. Go eat lunch.
Yes.
Yes.
Come see us.
Thank you to all of our sponsors. All right, Katie, where are we going?
Okay. In his memoir, Code Blue, Memorial Hospital's medical department chairman, Richard Deichmann said that Susan, the nursing director that I talked about at the beginning of the episode, had asked him his thoughts on whether it would be humane to euthanize Memorial's DNR patients, something that her lawyer vehemently denies that she ever did.
Sure, the lawyer says that.
But after more than 72 hours had passed since Hurricane Katrina first struck, some of the doctors, including, this is the big name of the incident, Dr. Anna Poe, made the decision to sedate some of the life care and Category 3 patients. They were giving morphine and the sedative midazolam, which is also called VERST, which I'm going to use VERST through the rest of this because that's easier to say.
Sure.
But this is a fact. They did sedate these patients.
Okay.
Now, their motive or their intent on sedating them is what's up for debate.
I think you would. The reason you sedate is to make them more comfortable.
That's what the doctor's going to say.
For the situation or the pain
or whatever.
Easing
their pain.
You can delay their need for care if they're unconscious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That is what, that's what Dr. Poe's going
to
say.
Well, and it's a decision no doctor sits around and is excited to make, mm-hmm. I wouldn't think, at all.
No, because Dr. Anna Poe is an oncologist. She's a surgeon. She operates on cancer patients.
Sure.
Like, yeah. She is in the business of saving lives.
Yes.
But all doctors are, but she really is.
Yes.
Like, so yeah. I guess I'm going to show you what side of this I lean on before we even get into it. But that's who she is. She's well respected. She was top doctor here at this hospital. She did not have to be here. She was one of these that she could have gone home a long time ago. Mm-hmm. She had the means to get home. Her home was not flooded. Mm-hmm. Like, she could have been home. And she chose to stay with her patients. So, unbeknownst to those still inside Memorial Medical Center, the hospital's owners had chartered 5 helicopters to come and rescue these other patients that were still here. The hospital owners had really waited around to charter these helicopters. Yeah. They kept saying, the Coast Guard's there. This is what the Coast Guard does. Call the Coast Guard. Because the staff had been trying to get in touch with the owners of the hospital, and they'd been getting back. Coast Guard's coming. Coast Guard's coming.
And they were in Dallas or Houston.
Yeah, I was in Texas.
Tenant was the name of the company that owned.
Yeah. And so, on day 5 is when they're going to be chartering these helicopters to come get them.
When the National Guard helicopters stopped coming, because the way I read it, the owners are trying to count pennies.
Mm-hmm.
They're bean counters. So if the National Guard's going to come do it for us, we're not going to have to hire private helicopters to come and do it. And eventually they ran out of National Guard helicopters.
The private helicopters were there. They were available. There were companies willing to go. They were on standby for the go-ahead. Because people knew that that rescue needed to happen.
Yeah.
So, ironically, the helicopters are going to arrive just hours after a number of patients were injected with this morphine and Verst combo, which is going to allegedly lead to their deaths.
All of them that got this combo died?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, I don't like that statistic.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
I mean, that.
You mean every.
That concoction of medicine was derived at on purpose.
Every Ryan one of the individuals who received this passed away.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, the morphine knocks you out, and the other drug makes you stop breathing.
Yeah, I think. We'll get in.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Is that not fair?
I don't know the combo of the medication, but that the statistics on it is you don't give them together.
Yeah.
Unless.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I don't like that at all.
So, in researching Dr. Poe's case, she is claiming her goal was to make the patients comfortable, not to kill them. She's going to state this over and over again. Did not intend to kill any patients. But investigators are going to be surprised by the number of bodies in Memorial Medical Center's makeshift morgue, which is the chapel.
Oh.
So they have wheeled all the dead bodies into the chapel of the hospital. There's going to be a total of 45 decomposing bodies that are extracted from the hospital, which is a lot more than were found at any of the flooded city's other hospitals. This is what's going to spark the investigation into these deaths. So it was eventually determined that only about 5 of the 45 bodies found at Memorial were patients who had died just prior to the hurricane striking. People die in hospitals.
Mm-hmm. That's why they have morgues.
Mm-hmm. So only about 5 are going to die prior to the hurricane. Dr. Poe's attorney is going to contest that number, and he says about 11, or no, yeah, that 11 of the dead patients passed away prior to the hurricane. So that takes the number to 34. But of the 41 bodies on which toxicology tests were performed, 23 were found to have one or both morphine and the fast-acting sedative Verst.
Well, if that's a mass murder.
As far as the prosecution's concerned, I suppose.
That's a mass murder. But again, if you're looking at the 360 view, mm-hmm. this isn't, there's no guidance to go on here mm-hmm. when you're at day five and you don't know what to do and you're exhausted and you've...
The water's not going anywhere. No. That water was up for weeks.
Yeah. And, oh gosh.
Now, a small number of these patients were prescribed morphine for pain, so they should have had it in their system, mm-hmm. but that was a small number of
but
this
But they still died.
Still died. The levels found in the bodies were also much higher than what would normally be given for pain.
For those 23?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. An internist at Memorial Medical Center named Bryant King, he told CNN that the discussion of euthanasia was more than just talk. Based on conversations he had had with other workers at the hospital, he publicly asserted that one or more employees had killed patients. King said that when he learned that they were going to kill patients, he boarded a rescue boat and left. He was like, I couldn't stop him. He said, I'd rather be considered a person who abandoned patients than someone who aided in eliminating patients. Mm. He told this to Nancy Grace.
What a choice to have to make.
And he is he's a black man. And there was also, I don't know how true to the situation this was, but in the drama series, 5 days at Memorial, he talks about like that he felt like that he was one of the few black attending physicians there, and he felt like he wasn't really listened to, and he had to kind of mm-hmm. walk on eggshells. Which this is 2005, so I don't know how. And we're in New Orleans. I don't know how much of a part that played. I wasn't there, you know. I'm not a, but mm-hmm. that's kind of how the series made it seem.
Okay. And that, but that's coming from him.
Yeah, in the series,
the actual mm-hmm. man.
Well, this statement is coming from the actual man. Yeah, he ordered. Yeah,
not the racism. The I got out of that.
Yes, that. Yes, yeah. Okay. He says he told that on CNN to Nancy Grace.
Okay.
So, a lawyer for Life Care, the long term acute facility, like I said, that's leasing the space in the hospital, they alerted Louisiana Attorney General, General Charles Foti Jr., to 9 possible cases of euthanasia at their facility. The AG's office is going to hire Orleans Parish Coroner Frank Minyard to conduct autopsies on these 9 bodies. And they're going to find significant traces of morphine in all 9. So a forensic pathologist was hired to go over the toxicology reports of 4 of the 9 patients. These are going to include Emmerich Everett, and he was a paraplegic, and he was one of the large patients. He was about 380 pounds. He was 61 at the time. We've got Arethia Watson. She was 89. Rose Savoy. She's 90. And Hollis Alford. He's 66. The pathologist found that all 4 patients died by way of homicide as a result of human intervention. That was the determination. Several other forensic experts reviewed the reports on the 9 suspicious Life Care facility deaths. One of those experts is going to believe that 8 of the 9 were homicides. Another thought all 9 were homicides. And another is going to state all these patients survived the adverse events of the previous days. And for every patient on a floor to have died in 1 3.5-hour period with drug toxicity is beyond coincidental.
Mm-hmm. That is a mass murder.
Yeah. By the definition of the term, it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the coroner is also going to hire another pathologist, and his name is Stephen Karsh. He's an expert who specializes in scrutinizing drug toxicology tests that are carried out post-mortem. So this is his niche right here. He's going to come to New Orleans and he's going to examine this evidence. And he concludes that it's ridiculous to try and pinpoint a cause of death in bodies that had been sitting for 10 days in 100 degree temperature.
Oh.
He advised the coroner that in each case, the cause of death should remain undetermined.
Really? Now, he is an expert.
Yeah, he is, which these others are experts, but he is the expert in this very niche field.
At the top of his game.
Dead person toxicology.
And does he know any of these doctors? Is he connected to anybody that would skew his opinion?
Not that I've seen.
Okay. Okay.
Not that I've seen. I would think that if he was, that would be everywhere.
Definitely.
Yeah, and he wouldn't be a prosecution witness.
Is he?
right? And you say he was hired by the prosecution.
He's hired by the coroner who was hired by the AG's office. So an
extension of that. Okay, yeah. So the coroner's doing what the coroner is supposed to be doing.
Yes.
Getting different These opinions. Mm-hmm. And so when they get that information, what do they do with that?
Well, in July of 2006, we're going to arrest Dr. Poe.
We don't listen to the expert?
Nope.
Okay.
I won't say we don't listen to the expert.
Okay. All right. I'll just shut up and let you tell the story.
So, following her arrest, so she's arrested in July of 2006. We're going to get into February of 2007. The coroner is going to tell the media that for the time being, he is leaving the Memorial Medical Center deaths in question classified as undetermined.
So he did listen to the expert.
And he said that if Dr. Poe's case went to trial, the defense would put someone like Stephen Karsh, who was that expert, on the stand who would offer reasonable doubt.
Definitely. Definitely see that.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And so in Sherry Fink's 2009 article, the big article that was written about this, the 5 days of memorial that was in the New York Times, that was then she then wrote into the book.
Yeah.
That's what I started again.
Yeah. Right.
She's going to state that the coroner told her that he believed Dr. Poe was responsible for 4 of the 9 patient deaths on the 7th floor. And that he said, I strongly do not believe she planned to kill anybody, but it looks like she did, is what Minyard's going to say, the coroner.
All right.
So that sentence is almost hard to read.
It doesn't say anything. You said nothing.
No. Yes.
I think that means in his mind it's manslaughter, not murder.
Well, he's, I guess, trying to look at the evidence and trying to, he doesn't want to think that of a beloved doctor.
That's what I think. But he just is like, how could she want to kill these people? She took care of them for days. It's what she does for, why would she want to kill these people?
Are they just to a point where they're having to make some serious decisions? We've got these. We don't know about these helicopters coming yet, right? So, gosh, if we knew that we had these chartered helicopters coming, would we be worried about trying to make people comfortable, all in quotes?
And I guess there was no way to get that information when Tenet finally decided, hey, let's send these private company helicopters in.
Comms were down.
Couldn't get in touch with them. You couldn't tell them that they were coming.
It's not like everybody was on their cell phones. Mm-mm. Those towers are screwed up with everything else.
And they're probably all dead by this point.
Generators are gone.
Yeah, every tower within because 20 mile radius.
The Coast Guard and everyone else had come in and they had told them they had to have this hospital evacuated by 5 p.m. on this day because they wouldn't be able to secure it anymore. There would be no security for it. It's going to be overrun. There's going to be nothing we can do to help you.
Oh, God. People were looting and
the bad element's going to come in and steal the drugs out of the pharmacy in the
hospital. No doubt.
They're like this. They're like, you're on your own after this time. And so they were like, these patients are going to be left here on their own. And the theory was, and the statistics on it were that these people would die without assistance, without medical intervention. They were going to die.
Yeah, they were.
So, do you?
Wow. Golly. Well, this is just not black and white.
No, it's not.
Is it?
No. There's a lot of blame to go around. To me, it's kind of like the Twilight Zone thing that we did last week. There's a lot of blame to go around. It's hard to focus the blame on any, despite the efforts in the courtroom that
number
we talked
one,
about.
Number one,
to pinpoint the blame.
Number one, levees don't break. None of this happens. Mm-hmm. Right. Got to point that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, I blame the hospital owners.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I do blame them for not sending the helicopters.
Immediately.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why don't we have one waiting while one's there?
As far as any other blame, it gets really gray.
There's one story that I got to in the few pages that I read. Just when this crisis starts to unfold, the woman that you mentioned, who's the nurse administrator, she sends out an email to corporate headquarters in Dallas and asks, the subject line of the email was, help, all capitals with 3 exclamation points. Mm-hmm. And she's telling him, we've got to get these patients out of here. I have contacted our sister hospital in Atlanta. They say that they have helicopters ready to come.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me that you're not going to send them, that I should wait on the National Guard? That's your response to me? That's the gist of that first series of emails.
That's blame.
And basically the guy in Dallas goes, yeah, call the National Guard. They're on the way. And it's these days later that Katie is talking about, when the National Guard redirects its priorities to other places that need their assistance, that Tenet finally gets on the phone and
sends
their own helicopter. Mm. So yeah, there's blame. A big fat index finger of blame to point at somebody.
Sure. All right. What else do we need to, what other facts you got for us, Katie, before we all kind of weigh in on what we think?
Well,
did we ever end up in a courtroom?
We're getting
okay.
There.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. So a 10-count bill of indictment is going to be prepared against Dr. Poe. That includes 1 count of second-degree murder, which that is for the death of Emmett Everett, because he is the life care patient that was paraplegic, and he was 380 pounds, but he was not on death's door.
Right.
What was he there for?
He was a diabetic, and he was really waiting to be moved somewhere else.
He's a 400-pound paraplegic who can't move mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. his own. Was he there long-term care, like that's where he was going to live for the rest of his life?
No.
Okay.
He was passing through.
Got it.
Yeah. He got there. Mm-hmm. Someone brought him there.
I mean, I was thinking maybe he was
for
hospice.
Some reason.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No. A lot of the patients are kind of, you know, long-term care there, but he was not. Right. And I think that's why his charge is higher.
Makes sense.
In addition to 9 counts of conspiracy to commit second-degree murder, there are going to be 2 nurses, Lori Budo and Sherry Landry, who were also arrested, but the charges against them were dropped in exchange for their testimony.
Mm. What did they say?
Well, we're not going to get there.
Oh.
There's no... So,
all right.
The attorney general is going to state, when you use both morphine and Verst together, it becomes a lethal cocktail that guarantees they're going to die. And he says, this is not euthanasia. This is plain and simple homicide.
Well, and I think they're picking this Emmett guy because it's easy to say, okay, he couldn't get himself out of there because he's paraplegic. He's also very large. They couldn't get him anywhere, or maybe it would take a lot of effort to get him somewhere. So they just killed him.
Yeah.
That's why they've picked him
because,
in
like
particular.
Katie said, he was passing through.
And he's in his 60s. It's not like he's 90-something years old.
He expected to be home in 2 days.
And So that's one of the reasons they picked his case, because that's easy to paint that picture, that this is just what they chose to do to this
to man. A jury.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to skip on down and we'll go into Emmett because, yes, there's a bunch of staff who are part of the discussion, and they are going to say that she decided to end his life because she felt, due to his weight, they wouldn't be able to evacuate him.
Yeah.
He had been alert that morning, fed himself breakfast, had a conversation with one of the nurses and said, Cindy, don't let them leave me behind. Mm. He knew.
Yeah.
Like, he knew it was going to be hard to get him out, but mm-hmm. they kept telling him, we're not going to leave you, Emmett. We're not going to leave you. Mm. So that's the story that sticks out. That's the, you know, the tough one. But the grand jury is going to decide not to indict Dr. Poe. So it's going to eliminate the chance of finding her guilty in a criminal trial. So there is no trial.
Yeah. That doesn't shock me, actually, that they wouldn't pull the trigger on that one.
Yeah, but I wonder if there's a civil case.
Well, always, right? Mm-hmm. The prosecutors also weren't thrilled about prosecuting her. Like,
right.
So instead of presenting evidence and experts to the grand jury, they just instructed the jurors to decide what evidence they wanted to consider. The DA's office had reportedly been receiving letters condemning them for considering the case against Dr. Poe. So following the grand jury's decision not to prosecute, the charges are going to be expunged, and the state of Louisiana is going to pay her legal fees, which are going to total about $450,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She, of course, did face 3 civil suits for Emmett, and last name Alfred and last name Savoy. brought by those three families of those patients.
Mm-hmm.
The Health Emergency Powers Act that was passed in Louisiana in 2003 stated that in order to be civilly liable for the deaths of her patients, she must have acted with gross negligence and willful misconduct or in bad faith. So this is what they were going to argue in court, but they actually did end up settling these cases, and those settlements are closed. Like, we don't know the terms.
She probably had pretty good insurance if she was a surgical oncologist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the insurance just paid that. Mm-hmm. What the lawyers do in that situation is they work with the insurance company, and they look for, like, what the maximum is that they'll pay. And
just
then that's what
stop.
They agree to settle on, and then it goes away. Yeah. But her insurance definitely went up after that.
Yeah.
It's not funny. I'm not lying. It's not like an uncomfortable laugh after that. But that's basically what happened is the insurance company footed the bill.
Mm-hmm.
After these charges are expunged and so she's not going to be prosecuted, she is going to publicly admit to injecting some patients with morphine and that sedative verse. But she is going to keep saying that the purpose was not to euthanize them. She said the intention was to help the patients that were having pain and sedate the patients who were anxious.
But why use that second one? Wouldn't morphine? Well, morphine doesn't sedate everybody. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Some people don't. You give me morphine, lights out.
Same.
I don't think I've ever had morphine. Well, unless you count an injection. Is that what they use when they pull one of my teeth?
That's lidocaine, usually.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been injected or
been experienced.
You
know what, to be honest, I don't know if I've ever had actual morphine either.
Something like that.
But I can't take any pain medicine.
I've had morphine, lights out.
I don't think I have. Not that I know of.
But, I mean, it doesn't affect everybody that
way. No. But she said any medications were given for comfort. If in doing so it hastened their deaths, then that's what happened. But this was not, I'm going to go to the seventh floor and murder some people.
Mm-hmm.
She said, no, I did not murder those patients. I spent my entire life taking care of patients.
I mean.
And this isn't, she did 60 Minutes. So this is in her 60
Yeah,
Minutes.
I mean, I think at some point we have to draw a distinction between a sociopath.
Yes. And someone in a desperate situation.
Yeah. None of these people, this is why this case didn't get prosecuted. Mm-hmm. Nobody who wasn't there can know what it was like in that hospital for those 5 days.
No, that's true.
And I'm not trying to make an excuse, but it had to be pretty extreme for a 50-year-old woman who dedicated her life to saving people's lives to allegedly do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're going to get statements from staff that were working at the time. Like I said, they were talking about, you know, Emmett Everett and how he was asking them not to leave him behind.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that she went in there. They said that Dr. Poe told him she was giving him medicine to help with the dizziness he'd been experiencing that morning, which was probably also due to some anxiety. I mean, I think he really knew that they weren't going to be able to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And she also said that they heard her telling other patients that she said, I'm going to give you something to make you feel better. And that she was holding a handful of syringes. So that's what they've seen. They've seen her talking to patients and they've seen her with syringes.
Mm.
Other doctors and nurses also admitted that they injected patients. While Dr. Poe publicly stated that her goal was not to kill the patients, but to merely make them comfortable, some of the other medical professionals said other things. Like Dr. John Thiel is going to say that in injecting the patients, the goal was death. Our goal was to let these people die. That was certainly true in the case of a woman named Janie Burgess. She's a 79-year-old patient in the ICU with kidney failure and advanced uterine cancer. Another senior physician, Dr. Cook, at the hospital, arrived and addressed her condition, and he asked the nurse, do you mind just increasing the morphine and giving her enough until she goes?
Hmm.
And he figured she only had another day or so to live, and she was at 350 pounds, and it would be impossible also to carry her down 6 flights of stairs.
And if you need kidney dialysis and you don't get it, you don't have long.
No.
Depending on how bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Topped with cancer.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there marinating in a ridiculously hot hospital that's getting dirtier by the minute.
A lot of blame to go around.
A lot of blame to go around. Oh, gosh.
He's going to say, to me, it was a no-brainer, and to this day, I don't feel bad about what I did. I gave her medicine so I could get rid of her suffering faster and get the nurses off the floor. That there's no question that I hastened her demise.
I don't want to say I don't disagree with him, but I understand given the terrible situation.
Well, I don't want to go off on an aside, and I'm not trying to be funny, but it's funny to me, sort of, that these doctors in Louisiana could figure out how to end somebody's life, and the idiots in Montgomery that run the state prison system have tried for years to figure out how to end the lives of death row inmates, and they still... We've killed two or three this year, but there was one guy.
It wasn't lethal injection, though.
No, it was some sort of nitrogen gas. Yeah. We couldn't.
Scott, you're not wrong. The truth hurts.
Idiots.
But also, let's say that they just evacuate this floor of the hospital and leave these patients to sit there in their suffering. And then they find them dead. And it's, oh, they died
of natural
alternative. Causes.
Mm-hmm. That's the only alternative. Everybody else leaves and you leave the patients who you can't get out. Okay. And you come back in a week and they're all dead.
Exactly. Can I just tell you what I think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nobody asked, but can I just...
Kelly, what do you think?
Okay. Thank you. I think it was a mass murder brought on by a desperate situation.
Mm.
Okay.
I think it was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that the intention was, I'm a psychopath and I want to kill people.
I agree with everything you're saying.
It was, but definitely was a mass murder.
I mean, I'm familiar with the phrase justifiable homicide. That's that's not exactly
I think if you've ever gotten to a point where something was justifiable, you got to it at that point. In the case of Emmett... It's just sad to me because he deep down knew that they couldn't get him out and he was terrified and she ended that for him. I mean, I don't know. She says she didn't. So, and she's not been prosecuted.
No.
So let me go and say that. And she is a well-respected oncologist who has devoted her entire career to saving people.
And it seems like a lot of doctors were involved in this, but her name is, she's the only one that was ever had criminal charges even.
And why? You've got this other doc who's saying, yeah, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret it.
Well, I wonder, is it because...
But the difference was his patient was going to die in the next day or two.
Yeah. Is that the difference?
Emmett was just passing through.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the difference? Or does it have something to do with what Katie mentioned about the two nurses who agreed to testify against Dr. Poe?
I think so.
And so they got their statements and that was... Mm-hmm. They felt like there was enough incriminating evidence from those two witnesses who were at her side, probably helping her draw those syringes and making sure that they were filled with the right amount of morphine and Versed.
Mm-hmm. But they did. They walked in there and helped her. And you got the one guy who's like, I'm not doing this. I'm out. Gets on an airboat and leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it seems like if you're going to prosecute one, you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's probably why the grand jury, again, doesn't shock me.
They would not indict her.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that the lives of these patients were intentionally ended.
Yeah.
And I'm not judging about that. I'm just saying that's what I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it boils down to whether or not you think... I mean, if I was on the grand jury, thumbs down. I would not vote to prosecute this case.
Neither would I.
Sorry, if that makes you hate me.
No, I wouldn't either. Yeah. Even though thinking what I think now, I still wouldn't. I'm not going to judge somebody in a situation like that when help could have come in the form of helicopters, more helicopters.
And it's terrifying. Yeah. I'm so thankful I'm not in the medical field because these doctors and nurses and all the other medical staff that were here, they're just expected to, I mean, this is going to sound terrible, but like now they're putting their health at risk to stay in this hospital and keep these people alive the best that they could.
When all the helicopters, I'm just going to keep saying it.
Yeah.
They're getting very little sleep. They're physically exhausted. They're sweaty and there's no showering and no bathrooms and no supplies. And I mean,
yeah, the medicine's gone. The food is gone. The electricity's gone.
They can't even flush the toilet.
At what point is
this? You can't sanitize your workspace or around the sick patients.
At what point is this past the scope of your job? But I guess it's not. I mean, they all felt a calling to stay.
Well, let me ask you this. What would you do if, let's say you're in combat and you're a doctor and you got a guy laying there who's going to die and you just go ahead and pop him with some morphine and he just quietly goes on. Do you prosecute that guy in a war zone? No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, there's, you just described one of the scenes in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
They look at
and
each
nobody
other.
Thought for a second.
He's mortally injured. He's screaming, oh my God, they've hit my kidney.
Mm-hmm.
Or and my liver. So they it's my just liver. Make him, so he when the blood is black, he knows he's going to die him, because he's the medic.
Yeah.
And they all look around at each other and they go, and they just nod and they give him another of those little syringes of
morphine.
You don't
prosecute that person. But again, that doesn't explain Emmett's situation. Yeah. Emmett's not on the verge of death.
But... yeah, no, and I'm with you, but he was on the floor with all the other patients, and it was like, he is going, and I think he was bad diabetic, and so, like, if they couldn't get him out, and couldn't get him medicine.
Well, I mean, you going to lay there and slowly just let him starve and to death, or what are you
going
to...
Or have a sugar attack and go into a coma.
Or just go into a coma and just lie there. I mean, ugh, but still...
It's horrible.
No, I don't
horrible.
Know. I don't agree with Emmett. I don't agree with...
Emmett's the hard one. That's why he...
That's why they chose that one.
His widow was pissed.
Oh, I'm sure.
That felt like they were playing God. And she's like, who, you know, who...
Well, but
the
other side of that
God?
Is, look...
But we're in a different situation than a typical day at a hospital.
There are a lot of people walking around today who are 1 week from death if they don't get the medication they need.
Yeah.
Right? And he was stuck in a place for reasons beyond anyone's control where he had ended up in a spot where he couldn't get the medicine that he needed to live, so he was going to die.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just wasn't as easy a decision as the female patient who was in failure, you know, and you have organ failure.
But how far is he from failure?
I don't know. I just have a hard time with it.
That's for a doctor to decide.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Right. I
have
a hard time.
How long the bodies were there, they can tell you that these medications were in their system and that those medications can lead to death. But I don't think that they could really, like, from what it seems, is they couldn't really tell you that that's how they died or how soon after they were given those medications.
It's not so cut and dry.
Like you said, the expert. The guy who's an expert on dead body toxicology says, and it should be undetermined.
Mm-hmm. And maybe because all the machines were down, maybe she truly didn't mean to kill Emmett and was trying to make him, but because of the lack of, it wasn't metabolizing and maybe he'd had some morphine the day before. So I don't know. So many situations. Again, that's reasonable doubt, but it doesn't change. I think there were some very difficult decisions made.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that we never find ourselves in a situation like that where people have to make those kind of decisions. That's awful.
Yeah.
And I feel so terrible for Emmett's widow.
Mm-hmm. Well, God. What was the number you said at the beginning? How many people died in Hurricane Katrina? Total. Over 1,000.
Yeah, 1,300. Yeah, almost 1,400.
Yeah.
It's awful.
45 of them were in this hospital.
So that's, you know.
And there's so many stories going around of the local corruption there, people who were there just trying to help, and there's this greed and corruption from the
you're
city
talking
officials
about the story
and
you mentioned
and you know
I did not ask him about that.
Yeah,
I didn't see him. I was gonna ask him.
I saw him yesterday and I didn't think about
we're that's a story for another day.
Yeah,
but there was corruption. Let's just say that.
A friend of ours has some firsthand experience with corruption in New Orleans.
Local corruption.
In the days after Katrina struck New Orleans.
Yeah, during that time, the local, they weren't trying to help.
Yeah. Maybe we can get him to come on and tell that story sometime.
Maybe.
Because these people in this hospital felt abandoned.
Yeah.
They were.
And they were.
By the company who owned them.
And the local officials. Mm-hmm. They were...
Well, I'm sure that happened too, but I would point first and foremost at the executives
in
Texas who just said, wait on the National Guard.
Definitely blame. Let me ask this. Are the levees inspected regularly?
Supposed to be.
Yeah, supposed to be.
I mean, no one thought the levees would go. No one.
Well, you know, there's a big, if you want to get into conspiracy theories, there's a big conspiracy from the people who live in the lower ninth that they were bombed and that they were purposefully done so that they wouldn't, there wasn't a possibility of them breaking near the historic district. And instead they flooded the lower ninth, which ended up, you know, the water came so much that it flooded more than they thought. And
but it is lower and the what we talked about how the levee system.
Yeah.
It's slanted. I mean, the fact that it's just the lower ground makes me less inclined to believe that. But you know what? I wasn't there. I didn't hear it all. I didn't experience all of that. Awful. Some of the most awful times in our.
And just to be clear, unlike in 1927 when it was the Mississippi River that was going to flood New Orleans, in 2005, it was Lake Pontchartrain. So it was the levees that held back Lake Pontchartrain that were breached, however they were breached, because the pump system that the Army Corps of Engineers put in those below sea level areas was pumping water as fast as it could. 45,000 cubic feet per second those pumps could remove, but it was pumping it into Lake Pontchartrain. That's where you pumped it out to get rid of it. And so when the levees breached at Lake Pontchartrain, it all just came right back. So it wasn't that the river was flooding from rains up hundreds of miles upstream like had been the case in the 20s. This was all localized. That's where the water was. And they were trying to move it from one place to another, and it all ended up coming right back. So
awful.
Nobody meant for it to happen, but
no.
You know, sometimes we're not as smart as we think we are.
No, we're not. And we have to learn from situations like this.
Yeah. They had a, I read this, the before this hurricane happened, the hospital had a 120-page long plan for what to do in case of a biological attack. Remember 2001 and then anthrax letters had been sent to media and politicians. So they had a 120-page plan for a biological attack. Their hurricane plan was 11 pages long. So nobody had given something that, obviously, like Katie said, is dangerous if you live in New Orleans because of the Gulf is where hurricanes go to a lot. But they still didn't have a plan that made any sense. They were just guessing at stuff.
Well, they probably thought it was less complicated, too.
Sure.
Storm. We hunker down.
Yeah.
Food and water.
That's exactly right.
I mean, that's
when it's over, we clean up.
That's a tornado plan here.
Yeah.
Bunker down.
Yeah. It'll be over in a minute. I mean, in a hurricane, it's a hurricane's a day instead of 5 minutes like a tornado.
Yeah.
But that's what Katie's saying. The plan was bunker down.
If you didn't know we're from Northeast Alabama, you do now. Hunker down is probably not. I don't even know what else I would say in that situation, but I bet no one else says that.
I don't know, but I knew exactly what you meant when you said it. That means get in the closet with my bicycle helmet on.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's on. It's coming. There's a, I hear,
pull
I heard
a mattress
a
over yourself as you climb into the bathtub.
Yeah. I was going to say, if it's bad enough, you get a mattress in the bathtub.
There you go. Yeah. Get in a room with no windows. Oh. So, well, anyways, what a terrible situation.
Terrible.
I, you know, no one knows what they would do in that situation, in that desperation. And I think I agree. I wouldn't have. If I was on that jury, I would have said no.
I've never been in a situation that was anywhere close to that type of crisis, so I have no idea how I would react.
No, that's life or death, that's just, it's above my scope. I don't want to be there.
Hope I never have to find out.
Right, exactly. Katie, you did a great job today.
That was awesome.
What a head scratcher. That's a, it's a thinker.
I don't have a lot of head left to scratch. It's mostly bald up here. So.
Ethical dilemma.
Yeah, definitely. So, and you did a great job, and thank you so much for that. And what's the name of the documentary, if anybody wants, or the dramatization?
5 Days at Memorial. It's on Apple TV.
Okay.
And it's like 7-8 episodes.
Yeah, and but the book's the same title.
Yeah, and this case wasn't even on our list until Katie watched the show and said, oh, I got to do this one. Yeah. So it's that good.
Yeah, it is.
So
I'm going to check it out.
And I did fact checking on it, and it's pretty straight on.
Okay.
It is a dramatization, but the fact checking checks out.
Okay. Great. Well, we got homework then this week, right?
Crap. More homework for me. Guys, make sure and say something nice about us on your podcast platform of choice. You can go to Facebook and leave us a message there. We update that page every day. I think Kelly is still dicking around a little bit with Instagram. I'm not sure
I am on track
on
Instagram now.
I
have done better. I said I would
know.
Do better, and I have done better.
I don't have Instagram on my phone. I need to fix that. All right, guys. Anything else? Are we done?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.